Welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome to the Think Orange podcast.
A podcast with ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
Here are your hosts, Dave Adamson and Ashley Bohens.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Think Orange podcast, coming today from the Orange Bunker. My name is Dave, and today I'm joined by the Robin to my Batman.
Hey, everyone.
Ashley, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Did you used to watch Batman and Robin?
I never did. No.
Nope. Why not?
Because I was busy watching Disney movies.
Wow. Disney.
Yes, that's where it's at, friend.
It's so obvious that you love Disney. Favorite Disney song, go.
At the moment, I am singing the anthem of Moana.
Moana.
Yes, do you know it? Will you sing it with me, Dave?
I don't know it, but I know of Moana.
It goes like, see the line where the sky meets the sea. It calls me.
What did you think of The Rock singing in that movie?
You know, I didn't know that was him singing.
Are you serious? You knew it was The Rock though, right? Dwayne Johnson?
I don't know.
Wow. It was The Rock, Dwayne.
You pay attention to things I don't pay attention to.
Because he's a wrestler and I'm a guy. That's what we do.
Well, don't be sexist.
Well, you don't like wrestling, clearly. But hey, The Rock is in that movie. He's also a wrestler. Did you know that he's the highest paid actor in Hollywood right now?
I am not surprised you know that.
It's because he's so busy. Here's the question I have about The Rock. How does he ever find balance?
I see what you did there.
Well done.
Well, actually, that's what we're talking about today. And really? I think, you know, in the ministry world, I think this is a topic that, I mean, time management and just your long list of things to do and always feeling like you're in a busy season. I mean, you can only sprint for so long, right?
It's so true. So that's why today we are talking about the myth of balance specifically. And I know, as you just said, from a ministry point of view, it feels like you're going through a season, but that season becomes another season, which becomes, and pretty soon it's just your whole life, right?
It is your whole life.
And that's a good thing, but we all need to find this work-life ministry balance.
It's like you're constantly fighting between like reality and like what you think reality should be.
And guilt comes in there, don't you think?
It does, yes.
You're doing all these great things, but you still feel guilty.
And more is being asked of you. They put more and more on your plate and nothing's coming off the plate.
Yes, because you always keep saying yes, 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 yes. You want more and more because you know it's so good. But often, this is one of these pain points that we all face in life. I know that you felt that during your time in ministry.
Absolutely. I still do.
And did you know that somebody wise just told me recently that time management is actually one of the biggest pain points in the modern world?
I absolutely believe that.
Because if you take social media into account, the fact that, you know, great Wi-Fi and emails and things like that, people are always communicating with you. So you are always on. So it feels more and more like you have less and less balance.
I agree.
It's such a good episode to talk about, right?
Yeah, I'm excited. We're going to be talking with three awesome people today. Carrie Newhoff is with us, Frank Beeler, Doug Fields.
They are some key leaders in the church world, but also in the family ministry world as well. Carrie Newhoff obviously is a pastor from a church up in Canada called Kinexus.
And Frank Beeler just joined us on the Orange staff.
He did. He's an amazing guy.
He's so awesome.
And he's just got a new book coming out too.
He does. And we're going to talk about that.
That's going to be so good. And then we're going to hear from the one and only Doug Fields.
Yes. Every student pastor out there knows who he is.
They sure do. Hey, you know what every student pastor needs, I think?
What's that?
They need some one-on-one accountability, some one-on-one support. And we have a great new online resource for you. It's called You Lead Coaching. You can find all the information at ylcoaching.com. But this is really the place to go to get accountability and support for any staff member who is working with kids, students, or the next generation. Does that sound good?
I want to go.
It sounds really good. Yeah. All you need to do is go to ylcoaching.com. They are the proud sponsors of this podcast, and we absolutely love them. The other thing that we love, the other person we love, is Carrie Newhoff, and we're going to throw it straight over to him right now.
I want to start by telling you about a dream I had as a kid. I was one of those kids who wanted to drive long before I hit 16 years old when I was allowed to. And by the time I got my driver's license, I had heard of this mythical place in Germany, this mythical thing called the Autobahn. And as a teenager, I got so excited and I thought, you know, at some point in my life, I would love to be on the Autobahn. I just love to drive there. So fast forward to a few years ago, and I'm in Germany for an entire week working with church leaders. And we started in the north and worked our way city by city into the south. And I was hosted by a very gracious man, and we were driving around Germany. And so we started talking about the Autobahn. And I'm like, where is the Autobahn? So I found out when I was in Germany that the Autobahn is not actually a single road. It's a term that refers to the absence of speed limits. That's it. So any road, once you get outside of a built-up area, can be Autobahn when they lift the speed limit. So we're driving along, and occasionally, you know, we're on Autobahn, and it was pretty exciting. I'm in the passenger seat now. I'll tell you, what a lack of speed limit does for vehicles is pretty incredible, because here in North America, where I live, or other places in the world where there is no Autobahn, I mean, if you're in the middle lane and you look to your left and you see somebody coming up behind you, and they're sort of way back in your side view mirror, you know that you've usually got time to get around the vehicle in front of you, pass, and then pull back in the lane before that vehicle way behind you gets there. Not so in Germany when you're an Autobahn, because you'll see something as a speck on the back of the horizon, and before you know it, like 3 seconds later, boom, they're zipping right by you. It's like they're on a slingshot. And so we're about 3 or 4 days into the trip, and my host says to me, hey, would you like to drive on the Autobahn? I felt like saying, do I have a pulse? Like, yeah, absolutely. I want to drive on the Autobahn. So we got to a pretty quiet section of the highway, and he pulled over, and I got into the driver's seat, and I pulled back onto the highway, took a deep breath, and I started to go. And I went, you know, 60, 70 miles an hour, 80 miles an hour. And I thought, okay, now this is starting to get exciting. 90 miles an hour, hit 100 and kept going, 110, 115, 120 miles an hour. I got it up to 123 miles an hour. I looked over at my host. He's kind of like, he's nervous at this point. What I didn't tell you is that we were in a 12-year-old Ford Focus station wagon. Not exactly engineered for those speeds on the Autobahn. In fact, the vehicle was kind of shaking. It was saying, I was not created for this. I slowed down. We kind of, you know, slowed down to a reasonable speed. But man, it was fun. And you know what? I think that's a metaphor for probably how you feel sometimes. You've got like Autobahn ambition and dreams and goals and maybe Autobahn responsibilities. But doesn't it feel sometimes like in your life you're driving a 12-year-old Ford Focus station wagon? I mean, that's what it felt like to me. Any capable leader discovers that they always have more ambition than they have capacity. See, there's a reason they design BMWs and Mercedes and Audis and Porsches the way they do. Because when you're going to take them to 200 miles an hour, you need a car that can handle that. So in this course, here's what my big objective is for you. I want you to move out of your 12-year-old Ford Focus into a new type of vehicle that can handle a much higher speed and a much greater capacity. Because the struggle that you have is a struggle that I have, is a struggle that all of us have. We have a lot more responsibility than we do capacity. And we have dreams that God has placed in our life that we just would love to see realized, but we just feel like we don't have the time. In fact, almost everyone I know feels like there's not enough time to get everything done. And if you've ever felt that way, or maybe you feel that way on a consistent basis, that's what this course is designed to solve. You see, too often your ambition exceeds your current capacity. So the question we're going to struggle with starting today and moving through all 10 sessions is, how do you create more capacity? How do you actually become a high impact leader? So today we're going to start with a very simple concept. I want you to abandon balance as a goal. Okay, because usually when we have these conversations about how do you get everything done, you know what people say? They say, well, I just need more balance in my life. I don't have enough time at home, or I just need to get balance. But here's why I want you to abandon balance, because I think it's a secret enemy. You see, people who find balance lose passion. People who find balance lose passion. Think about it. Most leaders who accomplish significant things aren't actually balanced people. You know what they are? They're passionate people. They're passionate. And so what I would love for you to do is abandon balance and pursue passion. If you can start thinking in terms of passion, I think you'll be making progress. Balance in our culture, and this is my theory, I think it's morphed into a retreat, not an advance. And as a result, balance has become a synonym for mediocrity. You think about this. Most people are like, I just want more balance in my life. So I'm not going to work as hard, and I'm going to take time off, and I'm going to relax, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that. But soon, you find yourself going through life passionlessly. I mean, you're not excited about your work anymore. You're always trying to find that balance. And I think one of the most important changes that I've made in my life is I abandoned balance a long time ago. I read this quote a number of years ago from John Wesley, and I love it. It's one of my favorites. He says, "Set yourself on fire with passion, and people will come from miles to watch you burn." And isn't that true? That's John Wesley. You're attracted to people who are passionate. You're attracted to people who are on fire with what they do. And what if you became one of those people? So stop trying to balance work, to balance family, to balance personal time and time off, and start pursuing each of them with energy and passion. Pursue your work with passion. Pursue your family with passion. Pursue your personal hobbies with passion. Pursue your leisure time with passion. And pursue your rest with passion. And I think when you do this, this is a big shift, but if you do this, you will have a far higher level of impact. And I think you're going to enjoy your life a lot more. So trying to balance everything will kill your passion.
Well, I am so glad that we are in the Think Orange bunker when Carrie Newhoff is dropping bombs like that.
Well done, friend.
That was amazing stuff. And Frank, I'm so happy that you are here with us. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, we're going to have some fun today.
We sure are. So we just heard Carrie say that balance kills passion. That's some pretty intense stuff. Can you tell us, how does balance actually kill passion?
Well, when it comes to passion, one of the biggest challenges that we face is we're got to pursue things that can actually happen. When we're passionate, we want to pursue something that we can see life change. We can see things happen in our world. But when it comes to balance, it doesn't actually exist. And I really believe that. I think that everybody that's pursuing balance is frustrated right now because it doesn't happen.
Okay, so we're going to talk about the idea of balance in just a little bit. But what are some passions that like you have? What are some passions that you're talking about?
Yeah, so some of those passions are big, high-level passions. Like, I love the idea of seeing someone engage in worship for the first time at a whole nother level. I love seeing that. So anything I can do to support that or make that happen. When it comes to families, seeing them engage with their kids, leading their kids to Christ, big things that are happening in our lives that we're passionate about that mean so much to us, but they take practical steps in order to make them happen.
But that can be passionate about small things as well, as in hobbies. Like, I'm interested in photography, I should pursue that with passion, is what you're saying.
Yeah, definitely. I think all of us, you know, I'm in a season where I've got 3 kids biologically. I just adopted a 4th kid, and my passions are whatever their passions are. And yeah. I'm just pouring into whatever they're doing and having a lot of great time.
That's awesome.
Well, I think it would be safe to assume that a lot of us leaders have gotten to this position because we said yes and because of our passion. But, you know, over the years, the day-to-day grind and the never-ending to-do lists can actually help us or cause us to lose our passion. So what would you say to us? Like, how could we stay dialed into our passion?
You know, there's a lot of books written on this. Ken Koster recently wrote one. He's a good friend. And he wrote this whole idea that we've got to know our why and keep going back to our why. And so sometimes we've got to lift ourselves out of kind of the muck and tactical, practical side of ministry and just life and remind ourselves of why we do this. And it's not enough, I think, to hold on to that one anecdotal story that happened that one time, but to constantly see fresh glimpses of how God is using you in a unique way.
Hey, Frank, I want to ask you, how does that work personally for you on a day-to-day practical level? How do you do what you just said?
Yeah. So one of the things that I love to do is in the morning to start my day after I've kind of ended a rough day the day before and I've been in the trenches for a really long day. Sometimes it's hard to get that start going. So one of the best things for me is for me just to say, God, here I am. I'm ready to do this again. Let me get started. And I have a good prayer time, but it can't stop there. I've got to then say what I believe God is going to do in and through me for that day. Very practically, I'll write it down. God, here's how you're using me. and I'll take a look at my calendar very practically and say, God, how are these things that I'm doing today actually moving my passion and vision that you've given me forward?
Yeah. One of the things that I do when I get home from work, you know, I work in ministry as well. When I pull my car into the garage, the first thing I do is turn the engine off and I just sit there for 5 minutes and just pray, trying to, I guess, to your point, trying to become passionate about my family and forget my passion for work. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think there's a key transition that has to happen where you've got to be able to let go of one thing and make it into the other, because we are passionate about all of it. And that's one of the tensions that we face in this struggle with balance, is we're passionate about so much, and what we do really, really matters, both at home and at work.
That's awesome.
So what do we do if we're not in control of our schedule? Like, what if your boss isn't on board?
Yeah, I think one of the big things when it comes to our passion and figuring out a way, how do we manage this schedule? Or maybe you're in a bunch of meetings that go way too long and they're mismanaged. It's kind of driving you crazy. It's taking a lot of your time. It can be kind of frustrating sometimes to have this schedule happening to you. Once again, we've got to calibrate around, why are these things that I'm participating in? Sometimes they don't feel like the thing that I'd want to do most, but how are they moving the mission and vision forward? Reminding ourselves why that meeting needs to happen or the value of that meeting. So that's a big part of it. But then the other part is to say, well, what is the trade-off that you're communicating with your boss or your supervisor on a regular basis to say, by you asking me to do this, I'm not able to do this. And you're pointing to the tension that they may be creating that they don't even realize. It's a very practical conversation to say, I just want to make sure I'm more than willing to do and say yes to what you're asking me to do. I will do it. But please understand that I'm in a position right now where that means I have to say no to something that I think is part of my job and my calling.
That's interesting.
Really helpful.
Yeah.
I really love that.
Now, Frank, you have a new book coming out called The Myth of Balance. Why is that a myth? I mean, balance is something we're all trying to pursue, right? It's something that leaders have been telling us for years, make sure you have balance in your life. So why is that a myth?
Yeah, Kara Powell has this great quote, and Kara's a great friend of our ministry. And she says, you only see balance for a moment when you swing from one extreme to the other, that you never really sit in the middle. And the only people I've ever met that were balanced were people that were unemployed. Like, they had a season where they're like, you know what? Everything is really good. But I realized some point along the way that this pursuit of balance, I didn't know anybody that had found it and had really got it dialed in, unless they were in full control of their schedule and they were kind of on the back end of ministry and kind of like slowing things down a little bit. Maybe they felt like they had their arms around it, but I just haven't found these people. And so somewhere along the way, I was like, wait a second, if I've never seen it, does it actually exist? And I've kind of determined that it doesn't.
Frank, I feel the exact same way. And I have to say, I'm relieved to hear you say that, because as a young leader, I'm constantly being told, like, look for balance. Try to find more balance in your life, Ashley. You got to balance that better. And I feel like I'm looking around going, does anybody have this figured out? Because I cannot figure this out. No matter what I try, that isn't what stays in my schedule.
Yeah, I think one of the funny things is, just the person that's telling you that, try to figure out how they're balanced. And one of the best questions you can ask the person that's telling you to find balance is ask them how they do it. Because more often than not, they can't answer because they're not balanced. They just want it for you. And so I think a lot of times we say find balance because we want it for the people around us and the people we lead. We want them to find a good, healthy mix of life. That's what they're trying to say. But they're not actually saying that they've found balance. They just want it for you.
That's awesome.
Now, when you talk about not having balance or balance being a myth, obviously, if that's the case, then we're not achieving everything that we maybe want to achieve. So my question for you is, how do you deal with the guilt of not being able to do it all, especially as a guy? I mean, as men, the way that we're wired, we often define ourselves by our job and by our success in the workplace. So if we're not able to achieve that, how do you deal with that?
You know, I think part of it is the problem of us saying that we've got to do it all. That whole definition of all, we keep adding stuff to our agenda, keep adding stuff to our calendar that no one, including God, asked us to do. We just feel the weight of like, let's do more, let's do more. And sometimes it's because we see a gap somewhere and therefore we're like, oh, well, nobody else is filling it, so we'll just step in and fill it. That's fine. But there's a place where we say, you know what? if I'm going to do what God has called me to do, I want to do it with excellence. And that means that some things aren't going to happen. And a lot of times I think we feel if we don't do it right now, then it'll never be done. But in fact, it's just not, we're saying that we can't do it now, but we'll do it in the future. And sometimes it's something that we never will do. It's not our responsibility, but we keep packing it on because that one time on that one day, we had a gap of time. So we added something to our schedule, not thinking about the ramifications long term.
Yeah.
I love that. From the female perspective, specifically a female who has children, what would you say? There's this real tension that happens when a woman wants to pursue a passion that's something other than her children, or in addition, I should say, to her children. What would you say to that?
Yeah, my wife does such a great job of this. Jess has found some way to be very full on in ministry and write and be so engaged. And we have, like I said earlier, four kids and we're busy. And she has found a way to say, you know what? When I'm at home, I'm going to be very, very engaged. But I'm also going to know that I don't have to feel the same pressure that other people feel. I've watched her go, you know what? This Pinterest thing isn't for me. Because that adds a pressure that no one, including God, once again, has asked me to do. And so when you start to see those pressures coming from outside, that's usually when I see the problem created. It's not the problem that the great women in ministry and great leaders that I've met that come to conference and gather with us, they're incredible and they've found a way to do it. Where it becomes a problem is when they start adding responsibilities that no one ever asked them to do.
Wow, thank you so much. Okay, so now we're going to hear from Doug Fields, the one and only Doug Fields, and he has something to say about balance, specifically about how the church celebrates busyness. And he discusses how we as ministry leaders find a healthy, sustainable pace.
But the reason I bring up NASCAR and why I want you to actually kind of get that picture in your mind for a second, not this one, is because... I think NASCAR is really a perfect metaphor for those of us who are leaders in ministry. It describes the pace in which we run. Ministry culture fuels a race mentality. We're always trying to get somewhere faster and to do more. And honestly, in my observation in the church for 30 years and now outside the church for the last few years, I don't see any incentive to slow down. That I think inside many church staffs, we might have this picture. That we're trying to teach people a 25 mile per hour life, but we're not living it as leaders. And inside our church environments, we have a bias towards hurry. We're actually attracted to hurry. Busy people are viewed with a sense of prestige, and rushed people carry themselves with a sense of value. It's ironic that it really, where I began to think about it, was last year at the Orange Conference. I was walking over from the Holiday Inn across the street. I was speaking on main stage in one of the sessions, and I walked by three different leaders who I knew, who I hadn't seen in a while, separated by several hundred yards over that 10-minute walk, and all three of them greeted me the same way. Who knows what the greeting was? Not "hi, how are you?" Not "how's it going?" "Are you keeping busy?" Three of them here at this conference. "Hey Doug, how's it going? Keeping busy?" That we tend to do this in leadership. We even, you know, are you achieving? Are you producing? Are you making things happen? Hey, are you doing stuff for the Lord? That in ministry, busyness is the new normal. And yet, here's what I hear from people. "I don't want to live like that anymore. I don't want to always be stressed out. I don't want to go to bed exhausted and wake up tired." And I'm just curious, in a room this size with this many church leaders, would anybody in here be brave enough to say, "You know, if I look back at my last year, I've really probably been leading at a pace that's too busy." Would you just put, and I want you to keep it up, and I want you to look around. Because if your hand's up, you're not part of the minority. You're part of the majority. And I think sometimes in ministry, when we have an issue that's impacting our lives, we think we're the only ones here. In between the two sessions, I sat with a friend over the side, and he said, Doug, in the last, I probably should have asked him if I could share his story. Is he here? He's not here, so it doesn't matter. No, it doesn't matter. So I'll be so general enough. But he said, you know, in the last year since I've seen you, I've made some changes in my life. Not only have I lost 13 pounds, he said, but I moved my church position from being the most important thing in my life to the fourth most important thing in my life. He says, I fell back in love with Jesus. I restored my marriage. I reconnected with my family. And I told the leaders at my church that I had spent the last 10 years giving 125% to the church, and I'm not going to do that anymore. And he said, and what surprised me is they appreciated that, and it changed the entire staff environment. Been in one church 11 years. I've been in another church 20 years. In the first church I was at 11 years, I probably stayed a year too long, and I said to, there were some situations that were happening where I just felt like I was really needed there. And I actually told a mentor, I said, he says, well, why don't you leave? Because I was telling him, I feel God stirring me to do something else. And I said, I just feel like the church is going to miss me, that they really need me right now. And he said, that's interesting. Hey, Doug, do you have a bucket at your house? I'm like, yeah. He says, tonight when you go home, what I want you to do is I want you to go to the garage and get that bucket, and I want you to fill it up with water. And then I want you to put your fist in the bucket of water, and then I want you to pull your fist out real quick. And the amount of time you leave a hole in that bucket is the amount of time you will be missed when you leave that church. He was right. He didn't have the spiritual gift of encouragement. But... Again, I was at that church for 11 years. When I left, it wasn't like elders were calling. It wasn't like people were checking in with me. I worked at Saddleback for 20 years. That when I resigned and Rick Warren said to the congregation that I was leaving, he said, you know, I'm just letting you know, Doug Fields is one of my best friends. Well, begun 3 years, and I've been with my best friend twice. And one was over the, as many of you know, the crisis of his son that I actually did the funeral a couple weeks ago. And I love Rick dearly and love their family dearly, but we were best friends because we did ministry together for 20 years. Okay? That there's got to be more, and just by the show of hands, honestly, there's more here, people raise their hand than I thought they would. Busyness is impacting our lives. Busyness is impacting our lives that we can go 3 years and not spend time with our best friend. Or we can work for 10 years in a church and watch our marriage crumble. You know, busyness is displayed in a lot of different ways. I mean, there's some funny ways that busyness is displayed in that are kind of humorous, you know, like, you know, anybody get into a fight with their spouse on the way to church? Anybody do that, trying to hurry thing? Let's go! You're yelling at your kids, we gotta go love Jesus, you know, and be on time with it. You know, there's, you know, people that, do we have any what I call gronkers? My kids and I have identified gronkers in here. You tell me if you're a gronker. Where the light turns green and the car in front of you doesn't go immediately, so you honk. You're a gronker. Any gronkers in here? Okay, good, because I hate gronkers, okay? But you, time is, we're always, like, how about this one? You go to a grocery store and you choose what line you're going to go stand in. You run all these mental calculations in your mind, like the items in a cart divided by the age of the checker, you know, and then you stand, and you don't stand calmly, you don't stand peacefully, you stand checking your email or Facebook or something, all watching where you would have been in that other line, and then you're ticked off if the other line went through, or you're prideful if it didn't. But busyness is also displayed in some less humorous ways as well, isn't it? Superficial relationships, a lack of personal depth, where no one really knows you. Most ministry leaders, everybody knows them, but nobody knows them. A lot of people in your church know who you are, but very few people know who you are. See, I'd say it like this. There's a price to pay for busyness, and it's steep. As a matter of fact, I'd say, you show me a busy person, and I'll show you a person who's broken somewhere. Busyness is a sign of brokenness. It means they're emotionally broken, relationally broken, spiritually broken. Some of you are defensive right now because you're busy and you go, oh, I'm not broken. Just hang with me. Hang with me, because that would be pride, so you're broken. But here's the tough question that I have for this busy community of ministry leaders. In this NASCAR metaphor, here's what I want to ask you. In your race, where is Jesus? In your race, as you go do ministry, speeding in circles at your church, where is Jesus? Shotgun? Backseat? Control tower, speaking into your headset in the still small voice, telling you to go faster? Or could it be that Jesus is not a part of that mess? And that maybe, and maybe during these few minutes that we're together, you sense from his spirit that he's wooing you away from that NASCAR lifestyle. See, I think as ministry leaders, we live a NASCAR lifestyle while we follow a Jesus who calls us to walk.
Oh man, I love that idea that we have this NASCAR mentality, but we're always telling the people we serve in the church to slow down, while at the same time, we're telling them to serve as often as possible. We're lucky enough to have Frank. He's still sticking around with us. Frank, I want to ask you right off the bat from this, how do we, like the church, burn the candle at both ends all the time?
We can't. I mean, we use that as a phrase, and I think that's a way for us to soften the idea that we're running too hard. You know, to say you're going too hard, to come too intently at somebody to correct them feels uncomfortable for us. So we have this casual phrase of like, wow, they're really burning the candle at both ends. Mm. And that's a very soft way for us to say, you're not running healthy right now. You're not okay. But we kind of receive it and are like, yeah, this is a tough season. Well, one of the things I've learned about seasons is that if they don't have a clear end, it's not a season. Hmm. And so many people are running this really hard race, this unhealthy race with no end in sight. And yet everything I've learned is that our calling isn't temporary. We have this great reminder in Hebrews. It says, and let us run with endurance the race God has set before us. This calling is for a lifetime. We can do this and we can do it really well, but we're going to have to take a few steps back, take a look at how we're going to do this for the long term.
Yeah, I love this conversation because I think one of the things that I've learned, Frank, is that rest is the one commandment Christians brag about breaking, right?
Yeah.
We do it all the time. Hey, how are you doing? Oh, so busy. I'm so busy. We don't do that with any of the other commandments, but I think what we get taught, whether it's through seminary or just experience, is that while we follow the steps of Jesus, we never follow the stops of Jesus. Whenever Jesus did this intense period of ministry, he always stopped. Even though the disciples were coming in saying, let's go. We've got to get to this next town. He was like, no. I've got to take a rest and spend some time with my Father. But I don't think we who are on the ground in ministry ever actually take that into consideration.
Dave is taking us to church right now.
Come on.
That's strong.
Preach,
strong.
Brother.
Come on, bring it.
Come on, somebody.
All right. Hey, if there's a leader out there listening to this podcast, raising your hand saying, yes, that's me, I want you to know you're not alone, because I'm feeling that exact tension right in this moment because my life is chaos right now. I came on staff here at Orange and man, there has been a lot to absorb. The end of this season is not in sight for me. And if that's you, then I want you to tune in right now because Frank, I want you to help us figure out what are some practical things that we can do right now in the midst of chaos.
Yeah, one of the things that I've learned over time, and I'm not getting this right all the time, and I hope you hear all these things I'm sharing, I'm still struggling with, I'm still trying to figure it out, but I'm determined that we can do better than we're currently doing, right? And one of the realities of this chaos is, I like to say, get it out of the cloud. You know, we have all this stuff over our head, and it's this cloud of worry and busyness and generic phrases, when the reality is, you're not busy today. You have 3 phone calls to make, 2 meetings to have, one article to write. You can get very specific. And when you get specific, I don't know how to grab a cloud. I don't know how to get that off of me and figure out how to handle that. But you give me specific things, I can figure out what I need to do next. And then next after that, and figure out the plan. Also, what that helps me do is that once I see it practically in front of me, what I really need to do today, speaking the right words over my life, not I have a ton to do, I'm busy, but here's what I have to do today. Now, when I pick up something new, I can see clearly the fallout of what I just did by saying yes to that extra lunch. I just added this and shifted something else. There's going to be fallout from that. But when you leave in the cloud, you don't see the fact that it's just tearing you up on the inside.
Yeah, that's so interesting.
That's brilliant.
Yeah. I think we all struggle with that, right? Because we don't have that mapped out. I know when my wife says to me, hey, what have you got on today? I'm always like guessing. What I've got this meeting, that meeting. I'm never really seeing it as clearly as you just pointed out there.
And yeah. It feels like even when you lay out your schedule like that in ministry, maybe you haven't experienced it, but I have. It's like, okay, my day just did not go like I had planned it to go. I had all these things I needed to do, and I did not cross them off my list.
The reality is we've all experienced that, right? We all have things just coming at us constantly. But I want to be clear, that's not a problem. That is ministry. I believe that ministry is exceptions. It's not what fits clearly on your calendar. There's something really critical to this idea. Ministry is exceptions, and yet with exceptions comes surprise. And yet we've got to stop as leaders acting surprised. Mm. We got to quit getting caught off guard by the things that maybe they're not on our calendar, but we know they're going to happen. I reference in the book a real simple example, real practically. My wife and I have the privilege when we were at Elevation Church to handle all the final interviews for staff coming on board for a long season. We did this. And what that meant was after they made it through all the hoops and hurdles of going through this long process of interview, if we thought they were going to fit on staff, we wanted to do one final interview with them over dinner just to make sure they weren't crazy. And it was a really important thing for us to do just to laugh and kind of get to know them. But the problem was because the interview process was so long, these final interviews would kind of come out of nowhere. We'd have a week planned. I know I'm going to be gone 3 nights this week and we're going to do this and we've orchestrated everything. Then all of a sudden something would come out of the blue and now here's another interview. And what happened was I would have to call home on those days when that interview would get scheduled and yet again tell my family, I'm sorry, I'm not going to be home. But I was operating as though it was always a surprise, but it wasn't a surprise. I knew another interview was coming, but I wasn't doing anything about it now. So what we started doing was we implemented a strategy with a plan for when those interviews would happen. And this is the big premise of the book, this whole idea of like, what if we develop a plan in such a way that when an interview comes up, I know what we're going to do with our family. For example, what we did was we invited our kids to that dinner. Let them sit at a separate table, and they got to order an appetizer and a dessert. So this is a big deal. You don't do that with kids at restaurants, right? They destroy the restaurant if they're there that long.
It's one or the other.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You can't do both. That's a major commitment. But here's what we did. Now, can you imagine the phone call I would make in advance, knowing what the plan was, when I call home and tell my family I have an interview? Now, no longer am I saying I'm sorry, but listen to what we get to do tonight.
It's good news.
Yeah, it's good news. Yeah. And yet before, it was like, oh, I'm surprised I have an interview. I don't know what we're going to do. It's going to be a crazy, kind of lame night for my family.
Yeah, that's awesome. Super, super practical stuff. Now, one of the things you touch on in your book is that there are warning signs that we can look for. And one of them is language. You say that language, that the language you use is indicative of what is happening in your heart and in your attitude. Can you tell us a little bit more about that side of it?
Definitely. One of the things is saying the difference between get to and have to. When we get busy, when it gets crazy, when that cloud gets big over top of us, I have to do this. I have to do another interview. I have to go to this meeting. And yet, once again, those are things that move our ministry forward. They're passion filled. They're great things, but they become have to's instead of get to's. And I can tell that all of us, when we started in ministry, everything was a get to. But there's something that shifts inside of us when it gets a little out of control. We've been pursuing balance and constantly failing, and it just gets chaotic. Mm-hmm. So now we have to. Another thing that I've seen shift in language, besides this idea of stopping saying get to, is us versus they. We are the church. All of us on staff, we're in this together. All of us as volunteers. And there was a point when we signed up for the church and we were in this together and we made this decision together. Mm. But at some point along the way, when our schedule gets a little out of control, we'll find ourselves saying, well, they decided. And wait, who's they? They is some of the staff. And so suddenly we're separating ourselves from the very thing that we're passionate about. And so if you start to watch for those languages, we'll be at a better place because those things we say can throw us off. But here's what I've learned. Until we take responsibility, we'll continue to pursue balance and blame others when we can't find it.
Wow. Can you say that again? That was awesome.
For sure. Until we take responsibility, we will continue to pursue balance and blame others when we can't find it.
Wow, that is good stuff. Hey, guess what? We have a question from one of our listeners. They've submitted their question on thinkorangepodcast.com. Ash, why don't you tell us what they said?
Yeah, Jordan in Savannah asks, as a single person in ministry, I struggle with my colleagues thinking that because I don't have a family that I'm always available. And when I say no to things, I feel like people have a what's your excuse perception. How do I communicate that I still have boundaries even though I don't have a spouse or kids that need me at home?
You know, I love this question, but I want to make sure we tackle the first part of it before we get to this idea of communication. You said in your question, my colleagues are thinking, I feel like people are. Let's be clear that they're probably not thinking about it nearly as much as you are. A lot of times we feel the weight of this. This is a self-imposed burden that if you start early in your ministry, you're going to be in trouble, right? Mm. We all have to be aware of the fact that people aren't thinking about us as much as we actually think they are, right? So this idea that they're thinking or they're talking may not actually be true. They may have come up at one point or another, but that's just a reality. But let's talk about it. Let's say they are, you're starting to feel that way. How do you communicate that you still have boundaries? I think it can be really helpful for you to communicate what you are doing. A lot of times it's like, okay, well, I have time, so I haven't done anything. Mm. Well, let's reiterate what we are doing. And I want to encourage you to actually have a plan in your time when you're not at work. You're going to a meeting. You're going to do something. You're going to be with friends. You've got plans. I think a lot of times where we feel the weight is we get so busy in ministry, we don't take time for us. We don't make plans to go do anything or spend time with people. And we justify it because we're busy and we're serving Jesus. But if we have plans, it handles a lot of this because now we can say, you know what? I was going to spend some time with some friends tonight. I'll get on that tomorrow. I'll be glad to help, but I've got to cut out at 6 o'clock. I think if you're in a small group, if you're engaged, if you have some relationships that you're looking forward to connecting with, even if it's a roommate or just hanging out, that's an awesome thing. And that's not qualified as you're not doing anything, you're worthless. And I think a lot of times, once again, this is a self-imposed pressure. And I think we can point to things and say that it's not insignificant that I'm spending time with friends or I'm getting a chance to rest or even binge watching a little Netflix.
Dude, this is good stuff. You should write a book.
Man, that sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, maybe we could just brainstorm it in the next podcast.
I think that's a wonderful idea. Awesome.
Hey, Frank, we know that you have passions to pursue and you've got things to take care of. So just wondering if you have anything else you want to say to our listeners before you jet out.
Wow, yeah. And you know, I think I just want to encourage you with one final thought. While I told you at the beginning of this, I don't think balance exists and it's a real tension and we can laugh about it and kind of play it off. The reality is it's a tension that all of us feel and we're all worried about. But I want to encourage you. I believe this can be done. And it can be done really, really well. But we've got to take some time to actually work on improving the way we run our lives as though we're doing this for the long term. This can be done, and it can be done really well.
Frank, thank you so much for your time.
Glad to be here.
Wow, that was a lot of great stuff. And I'm so grateful that we have a leader who's with us and in the trenches and understands this wrestling match that we all go through when it comes to balance and passion.
Yeah.
Dave, what'd you get out of it?
Yeah, I mean, I love talking to Frank. He did a fantastic job of just explaining that in such great detail with so much passion. And it's really that word passion, that was the thing that I got most out of, especially what Kerry had to say, the way that he talked about being passionate about everything that you do, whether it's work or your family, and how approaching life, every section of your life with that sort of passion allows you to be present and to engage in that part of your life. And that super challenged me because, and I feel like he was speaking directly to me because it's an area that I feel like I've been struggling with lately. I feel like I bring a lot of passion into my ministry, but not so much passion, quite honestly, at home. And so I need to get better at that. So I'm so appreciative to Kerry for just unpacking that a little bit further.
Yeah. You know, I had a thought as well. I was actually thinking like, checking everything that I'm involved in. Like, am I actually passionate about that? Am I willing to give up my life and my time and energy for that purpose or that vision?
Yeah.
And then secondly, I was just thinking about what Doug said when he was referencing how the cars in NASCAR have to take a pit stop as well. Cause I mean, you can only, like I said, sprint for so long. And for me, I try to make a pit stop on Fridays. I call it my fairy tale Friday adventures.
That sounds good.
Thank you so much. It's kind of like Disney inspired, but I love learning. And so on Fridays, I try to learn something new. I go somewhere new. I try something new or I do something new. And that's super filling for me.
Yeah, that sounds so good.
But you know what? I don't always have time for it.
Hey, that's the truth though. And that's exactly what this episode has been about. So you know what you need to do? You need to pick up a copy of Frank's book.
I will.
It's called The Myth of Balance. It's a great resource to have, and I'm sure that it will help you with your fairy tale Fridays.
I need it. I need help.
And you know what would help us?
What
would help us so much is if everybody listening was to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. There's one more thing that they could really do to help us. What is that?
If you leave us a review, it helps this podcast be put in front of more people so they would subscribe.
It helps you share it with your friends by just leaving a review. So we would really appreciate if you did that, especially if this is helpful, and especially if you've got other friends who are in the family ministry world as well. Okay, well, that's it from us for today. Our last reminder is this. Ash, you ready?
I'm ready.
Whenever you think next generation,
think orange.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Think Orange podcast.
Join us next time for more ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
For more episodes and show notes, visit thinkorangepodcast.com.